Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Jim Hipkiss, and you will probably note that is not the guest that I circulated when I sent out my email to you earlier this week. Jim has kindly come in at very short notice, as I couldn't get hold of my intended guest. I've been waiting for an email reply right up to today, hoping that they would be able to fit in. But for some reason, that evidently is not possible. So before I introduce Jim, I will tell you that he has studied the esoteric wisdom under several teachers at the College of Psychic Studies in London, and I would say that he would be correctly called a spiritual coach. He gives talks, he does articles, and he runs workshops. Are you there, Jim?
I am, yes.
Great. It's good to have you on the program. I can hear you well, so I equally hope you can hear me. Now, you run a group called Quest. Tell us a little bit about it and what Quest stands for.
Well, it all started off back in the 60s when a group of us used to meet from time to time and discuss what life was all about. And we decided that there must be a lot more to life than just going to work and earning a keep and getting up and going to bed. So we all went out in different directions and studied and periodically met back together again to discuss our findings. It wasn't long before we realized that the information we were getting wasn't just for us, it was for the whole of humanity. So we decided to form a group that we called BIRA at that time, B-I-R-R-A, but subsequently we altered that to Quest BIRA. And then from then on in, we've been gradually spreading the word, so to speak.
Yeah. So, as a result of that, what do you feel the purpose of life is?
Well, I think the purpose of life is to learn and grow and evolve spiritually. So it's a spiritual evolution process. I have an internal guidance, and that internal guidance refers to this as the university of physical experience. And they tell me that, as all universities, it has a curriculum. And the curriculum for this university of Earth is all the things we can experience on Earth. Hate, love, war, peace, you name it. And there are so many experiences we can learn and grow from that it takes many lives to accomplish this. So we come back time and time again to carry on working through the curriculum.
Yes. Clearly you believe in reincarnation, and there are people, of course, who are very sceptical about that. How would you try to explain that to someone?
Well, one thing I've learned right from the beginning is that you don't try to inflict your views, your ideas, your beliefs onto other people. If they're interested, by all means, you know, we'll discuss these things, but never try to convince them on something they don't want to be convinced about.
Right. But nevertheless, if someone was interested, how would you explain the process of incarnating, what it involves, and how there is perhaps some continuity between one life to another?
It is very difficult to explain to somebody who has no knowledge whatsoever of spiritual matters. But if they've got some idea and they believe that there is life after death, because that's the crucial point of it all, then we can begin to sort of bring in the fact that they didn't learn enough in the life they've just led, and there will be much more they could learn. So they are allowed to return through another child and carry on with their lessons.
Yes. Now, some people who perhaps take a slightly more religious view of life might believe that there is some judgment involved in this, and that what we might call karma is in fact some form of punishment. Now, what would you say to people who had that sort of view?
Well, the first thing I always try to convince people about is that karma isn't any form of punishment. Karma is a form of learning. It's not something that you can say, oh, I'm suffering because it's punishment from what I was last time. It doesn't work like that in my understanding of it. It works like we need experience. If we didn't understand the experience in one life, then we have to come back again and experience it in a slightly different way in another life to see if we can get the message again.
Yeah. Now, I would think someone like yourself, who has some past life recalls, would be a very useful person to put over the idea that there are a series of lives. Would you like to tell us about some of those past lives that you've had, the things you remember?
Yes, it's an interesting thing. I didn't remember this these past lives immediately, but as I got involved in spiritual things, they began to come to me. And then it dawned on me that things that had happened prior to my interest in spiritual things, I was having experiences that I couldn't understand. For instance, I can remember as a young boy, my parents were working class, but I was particularly interested in Italian opera, and they couldn't understand that because they didn't know anything of it.
Yeah.
And my first, when I first got my first pocket money, I went out and bought a record of Italian opera. And it was many,
yes,
many years later that I discovered that the reason I had such an interest in Italy is because I'd lived many lives here.
Right. Is that the only one you sort of have a recall of?
No, that was the first one that came
that
in.
That was the first one, yes.
But subsequently, other things trigger off memory. It's interesting that the things that trigger off memory, not only trigger off memory from this life. For instance, you can hear a song or smell a smell that triggers you right back to childhood in this life.
Yes, yes.
Well, you can have exactly the same thing happen to you, and it triggers you back to a previous lifetime.
Right.
And so I've had many experiences where I've been triggered back to time. I was here in Elizabethan times in England. I was here many times in Egypt. Another time I was a member of the Essene colony. So these things gradually come back to you, and it's through this meditation and linking to your inner self that this stuff is revealed to you.
Yes. Do you have any particular information you can tell us about the Elizabethan period? I mean, it's historically a very well-known one.
Yes, I mean, one thing I want you to understand about my recall, it's not total.
No.
It's very partial. Can you remember, let's say, taking this life, and I say to you, can you remember what you did on your fifth birthday? Unless there was something very traumatic that happened, you wouldn't recall it.
No,
so
no.
What we find in your recall, as you begin to get into this stuff, the things that you recall are things that were traumatic or had a very big influence on you at the time. So you find it coming in, the recall coming in bits and pieces, and you gradually piece it together.
Yes. Do you think those recalls have any value, or are they just simply flashbacks and nothing more?
Well, I know lots of people have always told me that you shouldn't worry about previous lives, just get on and live this one, which I can accept. But there's one way I used to think about it, and I'm sure it has a valid point, is that to really receive accurate information on previous lives, you must communicate with your spirit, your higher self. That seems to be the place where all this information is stored.
Yes.
And part of the work of anyone working on the spiritual path is to develop a closer connection to their spirit, to their higher self. So I thought by struggling to find out who I was in another time, I would be making that connection to the higher self. And I think that's proved itself to me.
Do you find that, in general, people have these past life recalls in what would otherwise be called dreams?
Some people do, yes. But you've got to understand, I think, that all the people on the planet, they're all at different levels of evolution. And it's not really right that everyone should remember anything from a previous time.
Mm.
What I can gather from my inner guidance is that if we consider this the university of physical experience, as we work through the curriculum and as we get near the end of that curriculum through having gone through many lives, then we're in a position where we better start studying for our finals.
Yeah.
And it's this process that you're gradually awakening up to your totality that these things start to come to.
Yes. Well, I'll ask you just one more question related to this subject of previous lives. Am I correct in thinking that you actually do regression for that purpose?
Yes, well, we do regression. It's not something that we make a big thing of, because we feel that unless a person is really ready, they shouldn't indulge in it. You see, there's various types of regression. The majority of people work with what they call hypnotic regression.
Yeah.
Now, the problem with most hypnotic regression is you actually regress the emotional body. The problem you have there is that you can go back to another life, suffer a very traumatic experience, and because you're in your emotional body, it can affect you drastically in this life.
Yeah.
So the way we try to work it is we regress the mental body rather than the emotional body, the astral body. And we find that way that they can be detached by their information that comes in and not be affected by it.
Yes. Does it always work with people regardless of what type they are?
No. No, I've found in my work that you can't guarantee that they will regress, and you can't guarantee to what life they will regress.
Hmm.
What we try to do when we work in this way is leave it to their own higher self to decide what information is beneficial to them at this time. So we ask their higher self to let them be guided to a life that will give them understanding of things that are happening in this life.
Yes. Now, in your work, I am aware that you are guided by spirit. Have you any information you can tell us about that? Any interesting experiences?
I'm not quite sure. I've had many, many interesting experiences, of course, over the years. It's difficult to pinpoint anything specific. Certainly I'm guided by spirit, and I try to live my life by the conduct that they recommend. But as for any specific thing, I can't think of anything offhand.
Do you actually know who your guides are? I mean, do they have a name, or what do you know about them?
Well, I've asked them in the past. I asked them many times if they could give me a name, and they insisted that names weren't important, and what was important was the information that was coming through. They said you should listen to the information that's coming through, and if it doesn't offend your intelligence, then take it on board. If it does offend your intelligence, throw it out. but they said that names are completely unimportant. But what they did tell me was that they was a group that worked within the spiritual hierarchy, and they called themselves the Group of the 33.
Oh.
And it covered all the various energies of mankind, apparently.
Right.
That's the most I could get out of them. And
although
one might speak or communicate with me, in fact, they tell me they're communicating for the whole.
Yes. Now, I've mentioned that you give talks. Are you aware, or do you find that once you start giving your talks, that sort of spirit can impress upon you the type of message to give out?
Yes, it's an interesting thing. I can remember many, many years ago, way back in the 70s, when I first started going out to give talks. I can remember one evening, I was on my way to talk to a group, and I suddenly started panicking and thinking, I really don't know what I'm going to talk about or anything about this.
Yeah.
And then I heard a voice within me that asked me to pull up in the car, and it said, you can't possibly do spiritual work if you're in an agitated mood. You've got to be relaxed and calm. He said, all you need to remember is that when you get up to talk, all you need is to start. All you need to do is to start talking about anything at all. It can be the weather, it can be anything you can think of. But once you start, we will ensure that the information flows through after that. And I took their word for it, and it's worked perfectly well ever since. And I can feel the difference that comes over me. It's as though almost so I'm overshadowed. And people have said, who've been at the meetings, that I look different, you know, when I'm talking to when I'm not, you know, a normal self.
Yeah. Now, clearly, at this time in the evolution of man, and the coming end of this cycle, a lot of what you're doing must center around ascension. What is your view about it? How do you think it will reveal itself, and how will it end?
You've got to understand that anything I say is only my own personal concept of it. It doesn't mean it's guaranteed. But the way I see it, it's a raising in vibration. It's not only a raising in vibration of us humans, but it's also a raising in vibration of all life. And the main thing it's going to affect is the level of consciousness. So if you consider that we're in a three-dimensional level of consciousness, then it will go up to four, if it isn't already there, and eventually up to five. This is a level of consciousness where you have the ability to perceive much more than you normally can in the current situation. There have been lots of people that have had flashes of this level of consciousness, and they say that they can see all sorts of things, you know, energies and auras and spirits and, you know, nature spirits and all sorts of things. And this is the sort of thing that seems to be to me that's going to be happening.
Do you go along with the view that many have that ascension will be a sudden upliftment when the energies around us reach a certain point?
It's interesting, isn't it? The way my people have described it, as though we're sitting on a wave, a crest of a wave, and we're moving along, and this crest of the wave is the culminate, the final sort of highest level of the wave will be at 2012.
Right.
And according to my people, everybody on the earth has the potential to go God conscious, if you want to use that expression. But whether or not they will be dependent on them completely. It depends.
Yeah.
A lot of people refuse to let go of their physical things that they're involved in, whether it's fast cars or, you know, going out clubbing or whatever they want to do. Some people are so into that, they refuse to let go of anything anything of it. For them, it's going to be very difficult because their vibrations won't match the vibration of the new vibration. It's going to be very difficult for them.
What do you think will happen to them in the sense that if they are not ready for ascension, where will they go?
Well, physically, a lot will die. But as you know, there's no such thing as death. We just move into another dimension. And if they're not ready to continue their experience in higher dimensions, I'm told they will be taken to another planet somewhere across the universe, somewhere across the galaxy, where the curriculum is suitable for them for their evolvement.
Yes. Now, with the advent of ascension, we're having a lot of contact with ETs, and they seem to be guiding us through this particular part of our pathway to it. Do you feel that we need ETs to see us through these changes?
I don't know if we need ETs, but they're certainly there helping us. I've got no doubt whatsoever about that. It seems that this particular period in our history is absolutely unique, and it's literally attracted people, beings from all over the universe. They want to see how this solar system gets on with this incredible change that it's going to go through. And so there are, from my understanding, thousands upon thousands of different ETs out there here observing, nothing more than observing. But there are many ETs that are very much involved in the process. Now, we're told that a lot of our genes and our physical form were brought here by various ETs, among them the Palladians and the Syrians. And so they think of us in a way as their children, their offspring, if you like, and they're very keen to see how we get on and try to help us in every way they possibly can. So that's the way I understand it all.
Yeah. Presumably, when we rise up into the higher dimensions, we will be at levels that will be consistent with theirs. So I can see a possibility here that we will join them perhaps in the next part of our evolution. Would you think that was possible?
Oh, it's quite possible, absolutely. For some, it's going to be an uncertainty. It depends on the individual, of course. Some individuals on Earth at the moment have literally come in from the ET races to help the process that's going on Earth. As the change goes on, they'll probably return to the races where they come from and continue on with them. There's also lots of others that aren't necessarily destined to go back to ETs particularly, but because of the raising consciousness, they will be able to communicate directly with them and be part of the Intergalactic Federation.
Yeah. Now, crop circles obviously have been associated with the ET presence, and over a period of years they seem to have become much more sophisticated and people are able to interpret their messages. What place do you think they have in our understanding?
I'm not particularly knowledgeable about this subject, only in as much as I know that a good percentage of the crop circles are generated by the ETs. I know there's quite a few that are man-made because they want to hoax everybody, but you can usually tell the difference between the two if you go to these circles. It's unfortunately we call them crop circles because there's very few circles anymore. They're very, as you said, very elaborate patterns and designs, and we're told that the patterns and designs are created to create a very specific energy vibration that will assist the Earth in its changing vibration.
Yes. I think the most interesting ones might be those that are somewhat different. And I'm thinking of the one that was found some little years ago now that depicted what clearly was the head of an ET and then gave, through a type of universal language, details of their civilization. And I thought that was very interesting because it wasn't many, many years before that that we also sent our details out into space, didn't we?
Yes, that's true. I don't know a lot about that particular one you're talking about, but I don't think anything is impossible for these people, as far as we're concerned, because they are so way above us in their evolution.
Yeah.
The things that they could do, which to us appear absolutely magical, mystical, to them would probably be quite normal.
Yes. Have you been into crop circles in which event? Did you notice any particular change in the energies?
I think, yes, if you go into a genuine crop circle, you can actually feel the energy, if you're at all sensitive. I mean, you've got to bear in mind that not everybody is sensitive enough to pick it up. It depends on the individual, but if you've got any sensitivity at all, I think you'll find that you can detect an energy there that you can't necessarily understand, but you can feel something there that's unusual.
Yes. Now, it seems that spirit often refer us back to past civilizations, not perhaps such a recent one, comparatively speaking, as Egypt, although I think it is maybe a factor, but there is always a lot of talk in particular about Atlantis and then the civilization prior to that, which was Lemuria. And they seem to connect the breakup of those civilizations with the period that we're going through now, as though we are sort of having another rerun, and opportunities not to make the same mistakes. Do you see any connection yourself like that?
Well, according to my guidance, the Earth has been going through these cosmic cycles for millions of years. And at specific times, the cycles come together and it creates incredible changes.
Right.
Can you hold on just a sec there, Jim?
I think I've got an indication that there might be a call in. Yeah, just hold on a minute and we'll find out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello,
hello,
do we have a caller?
Yeah, there's someone here.
Who do you want to speak to, myself or my guest, Jim Hedkiss?
Well, I just wanted to say hello. I was listening in today, and you guys were speaking about the 2012, and I'm sorry, I didn't hear the name of your guest. I tuned in after the first of the hour, so what's your guest's name?
Yes.
Jim, I heard a reference to 2012 as like the crest of the wave and the potential for everyone to go God conscious. Has your guidance or your information led to what the experience of living God conscious is?
God conscious, as far as I can understand it, is what most people talk about, mystical experience. There's loads of people who refer to it in their experiences, but it seems that when we reach that level of awareness, we become aware that we are at one with all life. There is no separation. This idea that we're separate beings is the illusion, and we wake up from the illusion and realize that, in fact, we're all part of each other and part of the whole universe.
Right. Because I've read some information from a being who was described to be an avatar, and he was talking about as the movement of the avatar shifts in consciousness, that it brings that form of wave, if you will, or push to the society as a whole, and wondering if there was any reference to that type of information.
Well, I think it matches up more or less with what I've been given, but obviously these people use different words and expressions, but it all seems to point in the same direction. We're riding on a wave that's going to take us to higher levels of awareness.
Yeah. So in the end, it ultimately comes down to the awareness.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so, too. You know, it was interesting because it's I was a little boy, about 10 years old, and I had received a gift for Christmas. It was a wood-burning set, and I was sitting at the table, and I was working this tool and etching into the wood with it. And out of nowhere, this is silence that was beyond anything that's describable in words just enveloped me. And it was the most amazing thing. It was like I was looking through a window, and the window was the eyes of my body. It was the strangest thing. Everything was in movement, but I was in absolute stillness. And even the movement of the body was occurring spontaneously and on its own, and there was no sense of doing this. It was just this place of complete observation and absolutely still. Most amazing thing that presented itself to me at a very early age of life. And I've always felt, I've had an inclination that that state of awareness or that state of being is indicative of what the whole 2012 experience is leading us to. So I just want to get your thoughts or your guidance and intuition on that.
I think you could be on the right track there. From my understanding, as we link stronger and stronger with our higher self, our spirit, spirit itself observes things. It doesn't criticize, it doesn't judge or anything like that. Just observes. And it sounds very much as though your flashback then when you were a youngster, you literally switched to your higher self. Then when you come back to your normal consciousness, you come back to your normal conscious self, which is your, if for the sake of arguing, your personality, your ego. And then you have to come back to your normal understanding of reality. But from my understanding, spirit, the higher self, observes and doesn't judge. And whenever you manage to reach that level of consciousness of your higher self, then you become the observer, not the judge.
Yeah. It was a very interesting experience. And then it, later in my adult years, I had this other experience occur that it was back in the year 1999, and this explosion of sense, I guess I'll say, went off inside my body and my being, and within moments it traveled from the base energy center, and it went one by one, boom, 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 up through, and then in an instant when it hit the visual perception chakra, everything disappeared, and I was in this experience that was timeless and beyond space. It was an amazing unfolding, and it was an incredible sense of bliss, nirvana, love. Those words don't even describe it well, but they point to it. And from what I've been able to understand, that's what the realm of the creator at rest, or something to that nature. So it's just, and again, what was present in that was this awareness, this opportunity of perception that was in a place that seemed to be absolutely nothing, yet encompassed the potential of everything. It was just this,
sounds very interesting experience. Sounds very, very interesting. It sounds very much to me like you had an awakening of the Kundalini. Have you heard of that?
Yes, absolutely.
You know of the Kundalini? Well,
yes,
normally,
I know of
you
it.
See, for most people, we gradually work up through the chakras through life, hopefully, getting higher and higher. And as we become more involved in the spiritual side, then we come up into the heart and then into the throat and the brow. Sometimes people get an instant running up, going through all the chakras and connecting the base to the top, which is the awakening of the soul. So it sounds as though that's what happened to you. You had a flash of something that will eventually be your norm.
Yeah, it was an amazing unfolding when it occurred, that's for sure. And I can clearly tell you that.
Is that Mr. Caller? Does that give you a suitable answer?
Yeah, I just looking for the sharing of it and also the opportunity to hear another's perception.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's very kind of you
to come on to the program and share your experience with us and our listeners. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you. Goodbye. Right, back to you now, Jim. I'll just have to remind you that I was asking you whether the previous civilization of Atlantis, which seems to be the main one from which this current cycle started, what effect that had on us now, because we seem to be rerunning almost through the same type of experiences where we're now facing the end times. We have had indications that there could be some sort of final war, although that seems to have subsided. Do you think that we are perhaps given chance after chance as a civilization to prove ourselves?
Oh, I'm absolutely sure that happens, yeah. We can see it through many, many civilizations, not just Atlantis. But you've got to bear in mind, see, the problem I find with people when they talk about Atlantis, they talk very glibly about Atlantis, but what you've got to try and bear in mind, it spans many, many thousands of years.
Yes.
Now, if you think of our current period in the last, say, 2,000 years or 3,000 years or whatever, that's quite a short period in history, and yet we say, we talk about the Greek period, we talk about the Egyptian period and the Roman period, and now we talk about the European or the American period. So you've got these different periods that have happened in those few thousand years. And yet they talk about Atlantis as though it was always the same, but it wasn't. It changed quite considerably. There was a time in Atlantis going back, a thousand years or more before it went down, when it was a very highly evolved society and was one of beauty and light.
Yes.
But then the forces of darkness started to interfere with some of them, and gradually some of them went over to the other side, and it gradually broke it down. And of course we can see that happening in many other civilizations that have happened. I mean, you take the Roman civilization, for instance. I mean, that was an incredible civilization at one time. But as they got more advanced, they got more involved in debauchery and all sorts of funny things. And it just broke that civilization down, and it collapsed. And in X number of years, another civilization starts coming up.
Yes, it seems that no one civilization is forever, and as we know, things are always changing. Now, I'd like to get on to a totally different subject now, Jim. I know you've got a website, and I'll give you an opportunity to tell the listeners the address of it, and I know that you are updating it. Now, you sell through that meditation CDs, lecture tapes. You sell colloidal silver, and I know that you have already set it up so that overseas visitors can order and pay by PayPal. Now, what I'd like to talk about first is the meditation tapes. Are they specifically designed for spiritual advancement?
Oh, absolutely. That was our main goal when we produced them. I'm sure you're aware that the left and right hemispheres of our brain work completely different. And it's not really until we can get them balanced that we can get very far spiritually. They've got to work as a team, not as against each other as they do in most people. So part of our work we did on the meditation when tapes when we were developing them was to develop a process where that would balance out the hemispheres, the left and right hemisphere. And then subsequently, much later, we discovered that other people in around the world was developing the same sort of thing. I eventually met a guy by the name of Robert Monroe who had been doing exactly the same thing. But you've got to bear in mind, we developed these way back in the early 70s before anyone had ever heard of Monroe. But they are effective, and it helps you to get into deeper levels of consciousness. And that means you're more able to communicate with your inner self, your higher self, by getting into those deep states.
So, whilst other forms of meditation, tapes or CDs, might be valuable in enabling you to relax, your meditation CDs are particularly made to help people in their spiritual evolution.
Absolutely, yes.
Right.
That's the main point of them.
Great. Now, you sell colloidal silver. I'm sure it's known to a number of our listeners already, but for those who don't know quite what it is, can you just tell us briefly what it is and what its claim to fame is?
Well, it's pure silver that's suspended in purified water. But the only way you can suspend a solid metal in any liquid is to reduce it to very, very small molecules. And the object of colloidal silver means that it's in a suspended state, so they must be in very small molecules. Now, what they discovered, of course, many, many years ago, is that silver is nature's natural antibiotic. But it does more than kill bacteria. It will actually kill off viruses as well. But it does much more than that. It improves the immune system. And it really is an incredible healing aid in this modern age. So if we can suspend this pure silver in purified water, then we will have a way of getting it into the body and assist the body in all its activities. It improves the immune system enormously.
Right, so you presumably just take small doses of it on a regular basis?
You can do, yes. I mean, different people have got different ideas on this. Some people say, yes, take 5 or 10 mil a day, and that's all you need to do, and that builds it up in the system after a while, and you'll be fairly immune from most of the diseases that are going around. But some people say, no, I can't be bothered with that. I just want to use it as and when I need it. So, for instance, if you got some food poisoning or something, a bad tummy pain, you could go and take 50 mil straight off, and it would go into the stomach and sort that out in no time. The other ways you can use it for trouble with infection in the teeth or gums. If you have a mouthful in your mouth and you keep it in your mouth for about 5 minutes, it will destroy all the bacteria that's creating the problem. It really is a magical material.
Yes. You remind me by saying that I did read the story of, I think it was an aircraft or a pilot who had a very badly damaged leg, and his lower leg, a lot of the skin and the flesh had been destroyed, and they couldn't find any way to heal it. And then someone came up with the idea of having a type of bandage that was, if it's the right word, impregnated with colloidal silver, and they wrapped that round his leg, and I guess they must have changed it periodically, but the result of that was that his flesh and skin actually grew back, and I thought that was absolutely remarkable.
Yes, it is remarkable. The other thing is it also helps to heal without scar. That's one of the interesting things about it. And there's many researchers in the world researching into its activities. And, of course, now you can go into the chemist and buy Band-Aids impregnated with silver.
Yeah.
And, of course, all the NASA people use it on their flights to purify the water and the air and what have you.
Yeah. Now, as you sell it on your website, do you also give details of its various uses?
Yes, we've got a page on the website which tells you quite a lot about silver and its uses. And then, of course, if someone buys some, we usually send them some additional information as well. But you've got to understand that there is colloidal silver available in the States, so it would be absolutely pointless trying to buy it from UK where we're based. This really only applies to people in the UK or Europe.
Right, well, that's okay. It might be a good time, talking about your website, if you actually gave out the website address, Jim.
Yes, it's quest-byra, B-I-R-R-A. That's all in lowercase. So it's quest-byra.org.
Okay.
O-R-G.
As usually, if there is anyone who's interested and didn't quite get that down, when I do my archive report, I will put your web address in there so people will be able to look that up. So,
thank you.
Time has been going. So, sorry?
That's kind of you. Thank you.
Oh, okay. I thought you wanted to add something from it there. Time has been going on so well here, and we're enjoying ourselves talking to you. We've got about 5 minutes left, Jim, so and I need a couple of minutes to, at the end to announce next week's guest. So what I would like to ask you now is, you, working with your groups, I take it you obviously teach people how to heal. Have you got any general advice to people as to how they may start to get into that, you know, become a healer?
Yes, I think it's interesting, isn't it, that the sort of entry point for a lot of people is through meditation. Or perhaps they've been to some spiritual healer somewhere or other and seen the benefits of it. But it's interesting that I was a member of the National Federation of Spiritual Healers back in the early 70s. That's in the UK, of course. And I wanted to improve my ability to help people through that process. And I asked my internal guidance if they could help me. And I was absolutely amazed at the answer they gave me. They turned around and said, the highest form of healing is teaching. And that rather baffled me. So I asked them what they meant. And they said, souls come into the earth to learn and to grow, and you learn and grow by learning to do things for yourself. So if you can teach people to heal themselves, then that's the highest form of healing in your world.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I've made it my business to go around and try and help people understand what causes illness, how they can get over it, and all those various communications. Teach them about the subconscious mind, higher mind, and all of those things that will allow the body to heal itself, which it can do naturally if you get out of the way, so to speak.
Yes. Is it generally accepted that people with, shall we say, negative emotional problems who cannot control, say, anger, hatred, or things like that, are actually harming their own body?
Absolutely, absolutely. What you've got to try and understand is that everything is vibration. You can't think of anything that isn't a vibration. So whether it's an emotion or whether it's a thought or a feeling, they're all different vibrations. Now, the vibration of things like anger and hate and jealousy are very, very low discordant vibrations, and that registers and locks into your etheric body, into your energy body, which eventually creates problems within the physical. So we often find people suffering because of things they've done in the past, not realizing that there's a connection.
Yeah. So if you're interested in healing, it sounds to me as though the first... Okay, right. Jim, we have another call, and we've just about got time to touch them, so if you hold on a sec, they'll come into the program.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello. Do you wish to have a word with Jim?
Hi, this is Joan from Ohio. I have a question for both you, Jim and you. Can you briefly, in the short time that you have left, touch on October 14th and what came through on your letter today?
Can you take that, Jim?
No, I couldn't hear that, Mike. I'm sorry.
Can you repeat
your
question?
Can you briefly touch on the October 14th?
I can't hear her, Mike. It's too far away.
Right. I can hear you, Joan. Repeat it to me.
Can you possibly touch on the brief time that you have left on October 14th? And does Jim know anything about that? And then I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Well, I can tell you that I did the last half hour of my program last week talking about that. What I'll tell you very briefly is that it has been confirmed by another message from a lady called Heidi Statler. It's been confirmed by the Galactic Federation through my own messages. So at the moment, the intention to have that sighting has been confirmed. There may be more information added to it as the days go on, or the days and the week. So we just have to wait and see now. So that is a brief answer to your question.
That's close enough. Thank you very much. Love everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
I couldn't hear that at all, Mike.
Right, okay, not to worry, I answered that one. I've come to the end of the program now, so I'll have to thank you very much for coming onto the program at such short notice. It's been very interesting talking to you, so I'll leave you to tuck yourself up in bed or whatever you're doing, and I'll just announce next week's guest to my listeners. It will be a gentleman called Bill Sweet. I don't know too much about him, but he's
thank you, good night.
In... Sorry?
Good night.
Oh, good night, Jim.
Good night.
Bill Sweet is involved in prayer and consciousness research. So for people who subscribe to my messages, when I send out my email covering this guest, I will hope by then to have a little bit more information. So thank you very much for being with me. I hope you can be with me next week. God bless you all.